Good morning and welcome to Local Matter Sports. This is your host, Sam Brooks, with co-host Michael Bowen. And today in studio, we have a professional bowler, and his name is Lance Key. Welcome to the show, Lance.
Thanks for having me on, Sam.
Oh, man, it's great to have you. I'm excited about this, Lance, because I've known you for a while. And, you know, I've bowled a couple of times, Michael.
Have you ever broke 100?
Yes, not by a lot. But I can't even hardly keep score, to tell you the truth, Mike. But excited to have Lance on the show today, and really excited for our listeners out there, Lance, across the Upper Cumberland, because I know bowling is a very popular thing around the Upper Cumberland. So excited to get into the beef of it. But first, Michael, we want to get into talking about who Lance is and give a little bit of personal background on Lance. So, Lance, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, but first off, thanks for having me today. It's a privilege. And Sam says that I have to call myself a professional bowler. I feel like I was at one time, but not anymore. But he says always professional after you become one.
It's like riding a bike, man. Once you ride a bike, you know how to ride a bike. So you're a pro.
I got you. Well, I've come to you from Smith County. That's where I'm from. I grew up there. So many different people just impressed upon my life. It's amazing. As I go through the story today, hopefully you will hear that. My mom, my grandmother, my dad. Growing up in Smith County, I played about every sport that was there. So I played football, baseball, basketball, karate, all the way through elementary school, middle school. I got to high school, and I just focused on one sport at that time, started in football. I had the privilege, though, of all those years that I played sports that my dad was my coach most of the way up through football. So I had that personal relationship and that attachment with him. But about the time that I turned 12 years old, my grandmother, she started taking me to Tuesday Bowling in Lebanon, because they had 19-cent bowling games in Lebanon. So she and I got started there bowling. My mom and my grandmother, which we'll also feed in the story later, they both ran a daycare center from even before I was born. So I would wake up in the mornings and walk downstairs to where my mom was, and there was, you know, kids that was there every day. So that's all that I grew up viewing, which was funny. Once we had kids in our life, my wife was a little, you know, I don't really know if I know what to do with this, right. but I said, don't worry, I got it. I've changed so many diapers, fed so many kids.
You know what your grandma called you?
What's that?
Free labor.
Free labor. There you go. Well, mom and grandma, there
exactly,
you go.
Yeah.
There you go. So I was entertainment, kept the kids going all the time. So, you know, I had so many people impressed upon my life at that age. My grandmother, she got me my first bowling ball when I was 13 years old. We were bowling, and, you know, I fell in love with it, to be honest with you. When I was 14, I played my freshman year of football. We had a really bad year of football, which I was not used to. And I decided at that point that I was done with football at that point, and I was going to go on and I was going to start bowling.
So what was it about bowling that made you fall in love with it that was a little bit different than the other sports, maybe?
So to me, it was, you know, I felt like I was somewhat of an athlete. I mean, obviously you don't get to that level without being an athlete, but there was a scientific game that was going on there that I felt like that I could see that other people weren't seeing, and it really just kind of grabbed my attention.
My first coaching job was at Smith County, and I barely missed Lance by 1 year. If I'd stayed one more year at Smith County, I would have got to coach him in football for a little while.
So you were lucky, Lance.
I was lucky, yeah. So I heard you got stuck with him, right?
That's right. So. Count your lucky stars.
He could tell you a lot of stories of being stuck with him. We've talked about that. We won't go into that, Michael, no more. We've done it on several shows, but... So the next level for you also, Lance, was getting into college bowling, and then probably little did you know at that time that would lead you into a professional bowling career. With kids nowadays, it's more about concentrating on one sport when they get into high school. Got mixed feelings myself on that, but for you and many of the other athletes that we've talked about, it's really worked. But there's some negative aspects to that too. One I'll throw up there, like a basketball player that really just concentrates on playing basketball. What we're finding out nowadays, there's a lot more knee injuries because there's no difference in the playing surface, you know, for any time for that kid. And so I think part of the reason you're starting to see some of those things is because they're really concentrating on that one sport. So for you, it worked out really nicely, and you were able to go, right into the college bowling situation. But let's back up a little bit and talk about all the work in high school that it took for you to get there.
Yeah, so, and I'll be honest with you, I am a believer in playing as many sports as you want to play. An athlete is an athlete, and I think that all those skills that are in one sport translate over to another sport. So I really believe in that. But, you know, for me, and the reason that I kind of went with the one sport was at 14 years old, while I was still playing high school football, I started bowling with the men. I didn't bowl with youth. I bowled with my dad, my uncles, and it was, yeah, I grew up really quick there. I saw a lot of things that we're not going to talk about today. We're not going to talk about those things, but you know, I was the young kid that started beating a lot of the men that had been bowling for years. So there were some things I had to learn real quick about how to act because, you know, I was still a kid and I didn't want to get whipped while I was there.
Today we're talking with Lance Key, professional bowler. So, Lance, continue on with that. You're talking about the experiences. You know, it's got to be great to work with your dad and play and bowl with your dad. And then all the older men, the learning curve for you was probably a pretty high one.
It was. So, you know, luckily for me, at 15, I started working at the bowling center. I had a buddy who drove down and worked there every day, and he would pick me up on the way. I wasn't able to drive yet. But the owner of the bowling center, Mike Seeley, a really good friend of mine, he was a professional bowler. So he just kind of trained me up on, you know, this is how you do everything. This is, you know, your swing's got to be straight. You got to have a knee bend. Your knee's got to continue. You got to rotate to the bottom and not just, you know, jerk up on the ball and try to throw it as hard as you can. So he really trained me up, and I was there every day almost from the time I was 15 until I was 23 working for Mike there, and he taught me so much.
And at that time, were there leagues you could be involved in? Was it just personal training? Were there teams associated with the school? How did that work?
Yeah, so at that time, we didn't have high school bowling like we do now. I want to talk about high school bowling a little later on, but I bowled almost every night of the week in a league, whether it be the men's league or it be the mixed league, you know, or whatever I could do. And then because I worked there, I had keys to the place. We just stayed in bowl till 1-2 in the morning and just worked on our game. And it became a love for me because I could get really as good as I wanted to be. And then he would come in and fine tune me where I was at. But that's also where, you know, him training me to do all those things, you know, bowling balls came in. So most people don't realize, but, you know, I carry a trunk of bowling balls with me everywhere I go. I got 8 to 9. It's just like golf clubs. You got to have one for every situation. So I got my second bowling ball, got it from him when I was 15. And it sat there for a month. Most people don't realize holes don't come in those bowling balls once you start getting into that level of the game. So I finally said one day, hey, man, you ever going to drill that? He said, no, you're going to drill it. And I said, I don't know how to do this. He said, well, go figure it out. So that's where my...
You didn't have YouTube at that
time.
No,
you did not have YouTube. I wish we would have. So that's kind of where my love for the actual bowling ball came from. I had to sit there for hours and figure out how to put holes in that thing. And in case for the listeners out there, if you put... straight holes down into a bowling ball for your fingers, they will intersect in the middle of that ball and you'll screw it up. So I had to figure all that out on the fly.
Wow. So you mentioned college bowling. So how did that come about? Not a lot of high school bowling around at that time. So how did you even get recruited to play college bowling?
So when I was 15 years old, they had a tournament there at the bowling center. So this was really my second or third year of competitive bowling. They had a tournament there, and I never bowled in a tournament before. And I just said, hey, I'm going to bowl in it. It was $40 to get into it, okay? I never thought that I would do any good in it. First place paid $1,000. You know what $1,000 was to a 15-year-old kid?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, still today.
So, yeah, exactly. So I get to the finals of this tournament, okay? So if I win this thing, I get $1,000. If I lose, I get $500. You know, I'm kind of excited about it. So I remember I'm bowling Bill Gallagher, really good friend of mine. He worked at the bowling center, too. I get up in the 10th frame. I'm down by three pins, and I throw the last three strikes in the 10th frame, and I'm like, man, I've won this thing. And my buddy Bill says, he said, you look like just a young chick over there. You had your chest stuck out, and you thought you had it. And he got up, and he threw three strikes in a row and beat me by three pins.
Wow.
But hey, I won $500 right there. In 2016, 2017, my uncles and my dad, they weren't great bowlers, but – that's okay.
They loved it, though.
Yeah, they did. And they were there a lot for me. So my Uncle Steve that's out there, Lynn Fry, Chris Jackson, thank you guys for putting up with me, the young puck, and of course my dad also. But we won the city tournament in Lebanon in 2006 – or not, I'm sorry, when I was 16 and 17 years old. And of course, the men really did not like me then because I was 16, 17-year-old boy, and we were then the city champions. So from the time I was 17 till I was 18 years old, I won about $15,000 bowling. So, of course, you know.
Did you get to take that money?
I did. Wow. It was cash. I kept it. I found out later on I wouldn't have been able to play any high school sports if TSSAA would have found out about it, because I was then considered a professional bowler.
Now, because you took money, right?
Because I took money. Now, I was not a professional bowler at that point. But you know, of course, being a high schooler, you know, I spent that money.
Right.
You know, just blew it. But from that, my buddy Mike, who was a professional bowler, he got me in touch with a local university. And they offered to let me come bowl for them. So, you know, it helped me get my college paid for and, you know, helped me to travel the world and get out there and see everything.
And of course, is that Middle Tennessee State?
That was Middle Tennessee State University, yes.
So cool. And you know, that's neat that you were – it's neat that they even have bowling. And, you know, I thought about this whole conversation. I was away on vacation at spring break, and I ran into the Vanderbilt bowling team.
Yes.
And that's what reminded me to get you on the show again and make sure that I got you tagged in to do this. But, you know, I watched those young ladies, and they were going to a competition down in Florida. And just, I mean, as professional an outfit as you want to see, just very organized, coaches organized, dressed up well in a nice bus. You know, what an opportunity for these young people to be able to do something like that in college.
Yeah. Yeah. So I get to MTSU, and, you know, of course, we had practice 4 days a week. We traveled a lot on Fridays, both Friday, Saturday, Sunday, pretty much as we traveled. I get to my first college tournament, and bowling terrible. I mean, it's just – I just wasn't ready for it. But then we had 9 games we were bowling. Game 8, I shoot 290. Which is one strike short of a perfect game.
Lance, I'm going to keep people on pins and needles because we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. OfficeMart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. OfficeMart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at OfficeMart.
Welcome back to Local Matters Sports. This is your host, Sam Brooks, and today we're with Lance Key, professional bowler.
So, Lance, when we left off here, you were talking about your first collegiate match. Could you continue with that story?
Yeah, so game 8 there, as I said, I shot a 290, which is one strike short, and it was actually one pin short of a perfect game. I left a stone 10, I'll never forget it, on the first ball, and then I threw the next 11 strikes.
All right, let me back you up. Stone 10.
Yep.
I don't know what that means.
All right. So stone 10 for our listeners out there, that means that you threw the ball really well and the corner pin, the very far right pin, didn't go down for whatever reason.
Got you.
Needless to say, I didn't know, but this is the first tournament of the year is always considered the hardest tournament of the year. So there's that invisible playing field we talked about. There's all the lanes. Most of us have met that after a couple of adult beverages and stepped over that line sometimes. But they can proportionate that all so that it is harder or easier while you're playing. So that was the highest game that had ever been shot at that tournament was 290. So wow. I'm sitting there and I'm beating myself up the whole time thinking, man, I'm bowling bad. But it really wasn't that bad. Game 9, Kelly Kulik, which is now a professional bowler, was, I think she's retired now. She comes out and shoots 300. So I was like, I had the record for one whole game. So fast forward a little bit. It's 2000 now. Same bowling year. We are in Las Vegas, which, by the way, collegiate bowling, we got to travel everywhere. I got to see a lot of the world. It was amazing. We're at the Orleans Hotel, which has a bowling center in it. I'm 19 years old. Well, guess what? I'm in a casino at 19 years old. You can't have adult beverages and you can't gamble. So I'm sitting there. I'm like, I'm here and I have nothing to do. All the older players are out gambling and having adult beverages. So I find out that there's just a little tournament. So I thought, I was like, I'll go bowl it. I have nothing else to do. So I go out and I bowl this tournament. I didn't even tell any of my teammates that I was bowling it, and I win the tournament. Well, I find out that the tournament I bowled in was a qualifier for a professional tournament.
And oh, wow.
Yeah, so I go and I bowl the college tournament, and I bowl terrible in it because I was all hyped up after that. on Saturday and Sunday, but then I had to stay the next 3 days and extend my flights to bowl the professional tournament. So that was my professional tournament. And I'll tell you, just like with the collegiate tournament, I was not ready for that. I was not ready for the play that I was going to be there, and I was just glad to be there.
So let me ask you, in that situation, was it okay on the college side for you to be able to bowl in a professional tournament at that time?
Yeah, so we were a club sport, We weren't TWSAA or NAIA. So at that time, I'll be honest with you, I don't feel like there was a whole lot of governing body out there in, you know, 99, 2000. They didn't care one bit, of course. And even in men's sports today, you can make money as a man and go in bowling collegiate sports. Now, female sports, you cannot. NCAA female sports, if you make any money, of course, you're out.
That's interesting.
So I bowled a couple of pro tournaments. Again, I found out really quick that I was in over my head, and I just I met a lot of people though along the way that really helped me out. Dale Warren being one. Met him in 2001. And my background while I was in MTSU, I started out in computer programming and was not successful in that. Second year, I go into mechanical engineering, and I'm in mechanical engineering 2 years. But after my second year of collegiate bowling and being at MTSU, there I had a little academic, you know, issues that I had to deal with. So after 2 years of bowling at the collegiate level, I wasn't there anymore. But in 2001, I started helping design cores to bowling balls. So most people don't realize, but bowling balls are not one density all the way through. They're multiple densities. So I took that mechanical engineering background where I had statics, dynamics, you know, structures, CAD programs, and I started helping design the insides of bowling balls.
And Lance, you brought in a core today. I know everyone can't see it, but it's sitting on the table here, and it looks a little bit like a large or kind of a medium-sized oil filter, but it's much heavier.
Yes. So that's 75% of a 15-pound bowling ball there that we've got right there. So there's actually three parts to a bowling ball. There's the outside. There's the outer core. So we'll pour a spear around that, and then that is what we would call the inner core. So, and what most people don't realize is when we put those holes into the balls come what we call asymmetrical, and then they don't spin true anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's the first visual aid I've ever had on a radio show. So it's pretty cool to actually, you know, look at this stuff. I wish we could show it to you, but we can't. But it's neat to actually see what he's talking about.
Absolutely.
Pretty cool.
So probably the most important thing then, I want to thank my wife right here, was in 2003, I've been working for the bowling ball company for a couple of years then. I met my wife through bowling. So she was out there bowling, and she was throwing a 16-pound ball. I only threw a 15-pound ball.
Gosh.
Yeah, I only threw a 15-pound ball. And we started conversing. She thought that I was just being mean to her. She didn't realize I was trying to flirt with her. But then in about 2 weeks, we started dating, and 3 months later, we got married. So as I'm coaching her, though, I said, hey, you're not throwing a heavier ball than I throw. I said, I just can't have that. That's not going to happen. So I moved her down to a 15-pound ball, and I think she's at a 14 now. I'm also at a 14-pound ball now. But that's how we met. And then in 2009, I've got to tell this story. She's going to kill me for this. 2009, I won the Tennessee State Men's Bowling Tournament. So I was the champion for all of Tennessee. I shot 853 for that. So, and for those of you who don't know out there, that's a little over a 270 average per game.
Wow.
Game one, we get up, we're bowling. And I'm in a pretty good groove. And she starts asking me, hey, honey, I'm not bowling well. Can you help me here? Can you help me there? And my response to her was, hey, I'm working on my game right now. You know, I'm sorry. I coach a lot of people, and a lot of people I bowl with at tournaments I coach. But come up, I'm in the 10th frame. I throw the first shot. I strike. I throw the second shot. I strike. And everybody starts clapping then. And she looks up and notices, oh my gosh, he's shooting 300. That's why he's not helping me. I got a perfect game going here.
Yeah.
So, and then I leave. Here's another one for you. A stone eight. Okay. That's again, you throw a great shot, but you leave the eight pin, which is on the back row to the left of the head pin. And then she has since then apologized so many times over that she almost ruined my perfect game. But I went on, won the state tournament there.
Today we're talking to Lance Key, professional bowler, talking about his career and getting into his coaching career also.
So were there any other memorable moments in your professional career that you want to touch on here?
So the last one that I'll mention, bowling the Tennessee State Tournament, one thing that I didn't know as a kid, and I wished I would have known, is proper ball drilling as a kid. As I told you earlier, my buddy who bowled on tour, he coached me, but he also would just give me bowling balls. And I was young. I was flexible. I could just stick my hand in his balls and just throw them. So most of the time, I didn't even change the way that they fit, and I would just throw them. Well, they were way too long for my hand. So it was like a golf club that doesn't fit. And because of that, I did some really bad damage to my wrist. Mm-hmm. And in 2013 bowling state tournament, I actually blew my wrist out, and now I can't put my thumb in the ball. I actually bowl with two hands now. So two-handed bowling is something that's really cool that's on tour. And then going back to the business, a good friend of mine just passed away not too long ago, Mr. Mo Pinnell. I met this guy in 99, and I was bowling the St. Louis tournament, which was always on Thanksgiving. And I shot 300 back-to-back on this tournament. And everybody was shooting 300. They were so easy. The hole was set up so they were so easy. And he comes down, and he puts his arm around me, and he says, "Son, you know they're not," and he put an explicit in there, "that hard." You know, so he's saying, you know, we set them up so they're real easy. But this guy, if you ever met him, he had a Jerry curl going on. He had an adult beverage in his hand during the college tournament. And I'm like, who is this guy that's talking to me? Well, later on, this is the guy that helped me most when I got into the business of bowling.
So just to touch on the equipment a little more, what are some of the main differences between a ball that, say, an amateur bowler would use just recreationally here on a Friday night versus what a professional uses?
Okay, so I'll apologize for my geek speak to start with, because I'm afraid I may bore some of you, but I'm going to give you a science lesson here. So a traditional ball like you would pick up on a rack, or a cheaper bowling ball that you would pick up at a pro shop, is what we would call a polyester bowling ball. So the polyester, it's a smooth, doesn't create a lot of friction as it goes down the lane. So with the oil, that ball just slides down the lane. But when it hits the pins, because it's sliding, it deflects a lot when it hits the pins. Now, if you go more into your higher bowling balls, we really have about four lines. We'll have a low performance ball then, a mid performance, an upper mid, and then a performance bowling ball. We have three parts to that bowling ball. The main two that we'll talk about is the inner core and the surface of the bowling ball, or the shell of that. That shell has different levels of what we call reactive resin in it. So we're going from a plastic ball to reactive resin. And in that reactive resin, a lot of times we will put what we call additives in there. Sometimes it's glass, sometimes it's mica, stuff like that. So you got to think that stuff creates friction as it's going down the lane, mm-hmm. which combats that oil.
So guys, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Lance Key. Good morning, Upper Cumberland, and welcome back to Local Matter Sports. This is your host, Sam Brooks, with co-host Michael Boland. Today we're talking to Lance Key about his professional bowling career.
So Lance, a question I have, and maybe a lot of other amateur bowlers may have out there, is, you know, if I go to the lane, I'm throwing the ball straight. Primarily, but if I watch a professional bowler on TV, there's massive spin that the ball spins into the pins with. Why do people spin the ball?
Good question. So what you see is that ball, we call it hockey sticking, going down the lane. So it goes on a linear path, and then it goes on a quadratic path, and most people don't realize, then it goes back on a linear path. So it really hockey sticks as it's going down the lane. So what we're trying to cut down there is deflection. So we know, because of Newton's laws, for every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. So when you hit that pin, it's going to deflect. So if you don't have any angular acceleration, so the ball cutting in kind of like that at an angle, the ball's going to hit that head pin and then just bounce right. And if you really want to see it, look at a kid throwing a lightweight ball. You'll see it hit and it'll bounce right off the lane. So that helps to create downward deflection. So the terms that I was talking about before, a stone eight, you leave a stone eight because you hit that 1-8, but the ball deflects and goes just to the right of that stone eight. Or the stone 10, the ball hits that pocket, and then the 10 or the 3 pin will wrap around the top of the 10 pin, and that's why you leave it. So we're trying to cut down on deflection there.
I didn't realize there was so much science to this.
And, I'm telling you what, he's a math guy too, so that he knows the math side.
Well, and this is, again, why I fell in love with it. I was somewhat an athlete, but I was also a nerd too. And people will tell you now, if I can beat you now, it's not because I'm an athlete anymore. It's because I've outthought you. My wife is actually a much better bowler than I am now. She won't take credit for that, but she is.
We talked about the bowling business a little bit. A lot of opportunities have come your way from being involved in bowling and the time that you put in, really since a very young age. And I know a big part of what you want to do now, and you mentioned some injuries along the way and all that, but giving back to younger bowlers now is very important for you. So let's discuss why it's important and what you've been able to do with young bowlers in this area of Middle Tennessee.
Yeah, so working at the bowling center, and of course, people saw me go from being a mediocre bowler at 12, 13, 14 to, you know, 15, 16, all the way up through high school, I became very, very good. So people wanted to know, what are you doing? How are you getting there? So I started coaching then, you know, at an individual level. And again, that's actually how I met my wife, was coaching her how to bowl. But after high school, I became a math teacher. My first placement was at Mount Juliet Middle School. And Joe Eskew, Mike Gwaltney, they said, hey, we need a football coach. And I said, well, I don't know that I'm your guy. I played, but, you know, I'll help. So they hired a head coach, and then I was assistant coach there. Loved working with football. Then I went on to Walter J. Baird later on, football coach there. But then I found myself at Friendship Christian later on, coach football and coach bowling there. So this is the first opportunity that I got to coach high school bowling while I was there. First couple of years, we were just training people up, teaching technique. And one thing that I had to retrain, and I have to retrain bowlers of this all the time, when you're practicing, you don't just throw shots. Just like with football, golf, everything else, you know, we have drills that you need to be doing, and we can train you on those drills. The problem is, most people that try to coach don't know what the drills are or don't know what they're for. So I was out there working with my bowlers, and then later on, that team went on to win two state championships for that. So
what are the top skills a young bowler needs to develop?
So the first thing that I would say is, do not try to push a bowler into too heavy of a bowling ball first. Mm. There's mechanics that has to be there, just like pitching a softball. I can, you know, any athlete, you can take and transfer their skills from one sport to the other. So they got to have a good base. They've got to have good balance and a good arm swing. And then after that, it's timing. So, and the best way that I teach timing is turn on some loud music, just get it going, get it thumping in there, and they will walk to the beat and they will figure out their own timing. So once they start the swing of the bowling ball, keep your feet moving fast, drive through with your legs, but you got to have that balance, because if you're not balanced and doing it the same every time, you can't repeat.
I'm going to tell you, that's a lot different than the way that I bowl. Yeah. there's probably no technique involved at all, and made a lot of sense when he started talking about the ball bouncing off the pins, because you can actually see that.
So sure.
I've learned a lot today. So, Lance, we always take the opportunity to talk about players that you've dealt with. Who sticks out in your mind of players that you've actually coached?
Man, and I'll be honest with you, at different levels, I've got to work with the best bowlers ever. Walter Ray Williams, which just retired from bowling this week. Mo Pinnell and I used to lay balls out for him, and I'd sit and watch him bowl for hours. And, you know, we would do different drillings and stuff. So I even got to work with him. Bob Learn, which is the head coach at Martin Methodist down in Columbia, Tennessee. Worked with him back around 2001, 2002. Also worked with Amuleto Monticelli, which is also, he's the girls' coach down there. Both of those guys are multiple. I mean, Walter Ray's got the most PBA titles ever.
Wow.
And I had the privilege of, you know, kind of sitting under him. Yeah. Now, he didn't always take my advice very well. Even with the younger bowlers today, Chris Prather, for those of you who are bowlers out there, I've known Chris Prather since he was knee-high to a grasshopper and have worked with him on his game. But he's just a great guy. But you know, then down to my own players, the awesome thing about bowling is it doesn't end at high school. It doesn't end at college. It's something you can do forever. And I've got players that I coached back at Friendship that now bowl with me here in Cookeville.
Mm. Yeah. That, you, we've heard that in other sports similar to bowling, like golf. You know, golf is a lifelong sport. You can continue to play that for a long period of time and really don't have to, you know, be a great athlete or in great shape to continue doing it. So that's something that's, you know, that's nice to know that you can do. And maybe with a family member, with a father, with a brother or something like that, you can continue that relationship on through sports. That's pretty neat.
So just want to touch a little bit on what opportunities there are out there for young individuals wanting to get into bowling, and maybe speak a little bit to parents here about, you know, how they can get their kids involved in this.
Yeah, so I want to start on the opposite end with collegiate bowling, which is where I kind of ended up, and then did a little professional bowling. There are so many college scholarships that are out there right now, especially for females in the bowling, in NCAA bowling. Now, there are club sports. There is an NAI, and you can get scholarships there. But I had a girl that I've been working with for the last little bit. She just got a full ride to Tulane, which is going to be a $250,000 to $300,000 education that she's going to get for free, one, because she had good grades, two, because she had a good ACT score, but three, because she could throw a bowling ball. Also, I know Sam was talking about earlier, he ran into the Vanderbilt bowling team. They are a multiple-time national champion.
Wow.
They practice out of Smyrna Bowling Center. I've worked with some of those girls that bowl for that team also. There's also things like junior goads, which are tournaments that you can bowl in to kind of prove yourself before you get to college now, which they didn't have when I was there. But those are televised. You know, I was watching some of those young kids bowl on TV. We actually just had three bowlers from the Upperman team that just signed with Cumberland University. So we got three guys and gals that are going down there to bowl at Cumberland, and they're going to get part of their college pay for. We've got approximately 200 athletes every year, 100 females, 100 males, that are bowling athletes, and the majority of them end up going out of state to bowl because we just don't have enough programs here. We've got about four universities here that provide collegiate bowling. We need more here.
Yeah, and that's something that providing those opportunities, even if it's a club situation at a college or institution, that would be something to get it started. You know, I'd love to see some of the local schools around here to be able to do that. Nice step around the Upper Cumberland for schools like Upperman, Cookeville High School, to get some kids involved in bowling. And even I think we have bass fishing now that's a sport. What a great opportunity for these young people to get involved in stuff that they love.
Yeah, and you know what I'd advise? I want to give a shout-out here to Brent Green and Jeff Scantlin right quick. They're Cookeville natives. They are the Upperman bowling coaches. But what most people don't know is they're at the bowling center every Saturday morning, and they're working in the youth league. So at Bowling World here in Cookeville, they have their youth leagues on Saturday morning. If you go in there, you'll see kids running around everywhere. It looks a little bit like mass chaos a little bit at times because you've got, you know, 6 to 8-year-olds out there bowling, but then you've got teenagers that are out there bowling. But those two guys are out there every day or every Saturday, and they're working with those guys, just training them up and working with them.
So what would be one piece of advice you'd give a student out there today who thinks they want to get into bowling?
I would get with these two guys. I mean, Brent and Jeff, and you're going to get, once you start bowling, you're going to start getting advice from everywhere. Stick with your coaches. Even myself, and most people know me, I won't coach anybody unless their high school coach says that it's okay that I work with them, because I don't want to give them conflicting information. The worst thing we can do is tell them to do this where the coach told them to do something else. They lose trust in their coach, and it doesn't work. So get with these two guys. They're, like I said, they're there on Saturday mornings. There's plenty of time to bowl there, and they can help you out. And if they want to point you to my direction or another coach's direction, you know, they can then.
So, Lance, what is – we've heard a lot, you know, of your life involved with bowling. I know your family is now involved in bowling, and it's something that you guys can do together. But what has bowling meant to you in your life, you know, as a whole? What has it taught you?
Oh, it's been, you know, almost everything because, you know, again, relationships. You build relationships, whether it's on the business side or the family side. So, again, met my wife there. I got to bowl with my grandmother all those years there. And, you know, I lost my grandmother. I guess I was about 20, 23 years old. She died of cancer. But, you know, I remember all those years of she and I going and bowling at the younger age. And she never was a great bowler, but she always went and took me. But then my buddy, Lynn Fry, he passed away with cancer a few years ago. I'll always remember bowling those tournaments with them. And it was a wild ride from that. And just all the people I've met along the way.
Got time for one more question. So favorite memory from your career? It could be an accomplishment or just a general memory. Something that you think about a lot in bowling.
I'll be honest with you. It's actually every Thursday night going out, spending time with my wife and getting to throw those shots down the lane. I'm not as good as I used to be, but that's okay. I've kind of learned that I've transitioned to a different spot in my life to where I can educate and help others. And then I guess the other one would be seeing the players on TV win that I've worked with in the past.
Yeah, that's got to be a pretty cool thing for you. Well, Lance, we appreciate your time and coming in. This is a new one for us. I'm really happy to be talking about, you know, bowling because it's very popular around this area. And I love that Saturday mornings our children can go out there to Bowling World and learn more about it and find out if they're really interested in it. So thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
No, thank you, guys.